Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjublilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Patricia Cavallari, and in this series we shall be hearing from academics about their research and from students and other members of the campus community about the many activities which will be taking place during the coming year. I am indeed very happy to have with me today in the studio for University Matters on Campus FM, Professor Michael Zammeed and Reverend Dr. Charlotte Camilleri. They have both come to discuss the seminar that they are involved in, entitled Sanskrit Spirituality, which is being held in the context of the master's course on world spiritualities offered in the Faculty of Theology, but I understand is also open to an interested general public. Just a few usual words about my guest. Michael Zammeed is Associate Professor in the Department of Philosophy here at the University. His MA thesis was about the structure of the Sanskrit sentence and how that declares a philosophy of action. His PhD thesis, on the other hand, dealt with the practice of meditation in Shankara's commentary to the Bhagavad Gita. He also published a translation into Maltese of this philosophical Sanskrit poem. At university, he started teaching courses exploring the philosophical notions underpinning the Sanskrit language, the source of Latin and ancient Greek, as well as other European tongues, barring the Semitic Maltese. Reverend Dr. Charlotte Camilleri graduated in Philosophy and History of Art in 1997 from this university, graduated also in 2000 in Sacred Theology, and in 2002 obtained a licentiate in Pastoral Theology with the dissertation Carmel Spirituality of Beauty. In 2004, at the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome, he obtained a diploma in an interdisciplinary course for formators, and in 2007 he obtained his doctorate in spiritual theology, defending the thesis Union with God as Transformation in Beauty, a literary spiritual analysis of the colloquies of Santa Maria Maddalena de Pazzi. He is a member of the Moral Theology Department as a lecturer in spiritual theology and delivers talks locally and abroad in the subject. Currently, he is the Archbishop's delegate for the Ordo Virginum. He is also a member of the Centro Studi Internazionale Santa Maria Maddalena Firenze and holds the office of Executive Director of the Carmelite Institute Malta. Recently, he was appointed Research Fellow at the Bloemfontein Free State University. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
I always like to give a little bit of a background to my guests on this program because I think it's important that listeners understand from where they're coming, so to speak. Before we speak about the seminar, which will span over two weekends and, as we said, is open to the general public, perhaps, Professor Zammeed, you could give us, I know it's a tall order, but give us a little bit of an overview of Sanskrit. What do we mean when we talk about Sanskrit?
Right, yes. It's a very ancient language. Well, what does it sound like? Purnamadah, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachyate. This is perfect, that is perfect. From perfect, what emerges is perfection. And this is a very ancient incantation to the realm of the perfect, of the limitless. We call it, I think, in our culture, the spiritual. And Sanskrit was originally the lingua franca of a large human collection of human beings that did not live in India, but lived beyond India, outside of India, and was perfected to a pitch such that even in common parlance, one can access not merely what is being said about the physical world, but some aspects of the dynamics of the spiritual and the psychological realms, so that even in simple sentences like the man is drinking, there is of course the aspect of the fact that the man is drinking involved in the Sanskrit sentence. But then one can extract from analyzing this sentence in Sanskrit the fact that drinking is a universal aspect, a universal activity that all creatures participate in. And that universality is contained in a very interesting way in the language itself. So Sanskrit, the language in Sanskrit is considered as being a divinity. It's called Vach, and from Vach emerges Shabda, which is speech. And we find some very early records of this recognition, this knowledge. For example, in the Rig Veda, which came to be written sometime around possibly 2000 to 2500 BC. This is when it was written. It had been orally transmitted for a few thousand years before then. We find in this Rig Veda, I would say the oldest literature in the world, Vach saying this, for example: I am the ruler who brings treasures together, who understands. Of those who receive worship, I am foremost. Whomever I love, him I make powerful, a seer, a sage. I pervade heaven and earth. It is I who gave birth to the Father on the summit of this world. So this is Vach expressing itself, very, very much in the spirit of, you know, St. John's, in the beginning was the Word, etc., etc., which of course was written in Greek. And as we now know, Greek, Latin, and Persian, and therefore all the European languages, are Sanskrit-derived.
What we call Indo-European.
Indo-European, yes. But the original Sanskrit was Vedic Sanskrit, Proto-Sanskrit. Sometimes it's called Proto-Indo-European. Eventually, these peoples these tribes who were nomadic, eventually they moved into India, crossed into through the Himalayas, settled down, met other cultures, and of course the settling down started to induce them to learn writing and putting down all this knowledge in writing, so that now we've got an extraordinary library in Sanskrit, running into something like 2 million texts, which is of course the largest collection of texts in any language. In any language,
it's amazing.
It's amazing, and much of them are not read, and they speak not merely of philosophy and poetry, but of art and theater and music and literature. Just imagine when the Muslim culture came across Indian culture. In the very early parts of the Muslim Renaissance, when it was just happening, well, what did they learn from the Sanskrit? They learned the numbers, which then they transmitted to us, and we still know them as Arabic numbers. They are actually Sanskrit. That's a Sanskrit arithmetic that they got. They learned medicine, the use of all sorts of medical care systems, suturing and surgery and pills and the use of herbs and so on. They learned architecture, astronomy, and astrology, which was an explanation of the way the mind works, etc., etc. And this all started flowing into Europe, of course.
Well, before perhaps going a little more into that idea of the mixture of culture with words, perhaps I could pass to Father Camilleri and ask really what he feels is the link between Sanskrit spirituality and Christianity, because obviously if you're in on this, there must be some sort of a deep feeling of unison.
So let me start from the Christian perspective, or rather from the universal perspective. I believe, and spiritual theology believes, or the starting point of spiritual theology, is that the human being is not merely matter, but the core of the human being is spiritual. And this is universal. We tend to popularly confuse, not that there is no connection, but we tend to confuse the realm of religion and the realm of spirituality. They are both connected, but they are distinct. Independently of our religious affiliation, of our religious tradition, independently of our culture, independently of everything, at the core of our being, we discover that we are called for transcendence. And this is, spirituality. This is spirituality at its deepest and most basic and foundational, basic in the sense of foundational aspect. Then obviously, so on this level, we can connect. We can connect religions, religious experience. We can connect also human experience. Obviously then, this this element of transcendence, this element of nostalgia for oneness, this nostalgia for going back to our original state. It's like going back to the future. Then it is expressed in various ways and in various forms, according to culture, according to language. But we can recognize, and I think dialogue can start at this. It has to start on this level, on what is foundational to all experiences, what is basic. And obviously, there are in Christian spirituality and mysticism, we can say there is the same quest, which we find also in Sanskrit. So there is this element of transcendence. There is this element of searching for, or yearning for, longing for oneness, oneness with God, with oneself, with God and with creation, humanity, and the created order. There is also this acknowledgement that we come from God, or the divinity, and we are going back to God. It's a flow. It's a flow. Unfortunately, especially locally, we tend to relegate Christianity and the Christian tradition to moral precepts, to action, to external forms of religious expression. And unfortunately, I think, especially locally, we have forgotten, or we have put aside, this inner dimension of Christianity, which ultimately is about reaching stillness, to be with oneself in the presence of a personal God. I'm no expert of Sanskrit and Sanskrit spirituality, but I think what first there was this connection between the Greek Johannine text, the beginning of the word, and the Rah Veda and the Wash. I think what's distinctive of Christianity is that this transcendence, this oneness, this this searching for stillness and wholeness and integrity is lived in the context and in the backdrop of a personal God. Right. So I think that these are some connections.
Connections, yes. I'd like to pick up on just that word transcendence.
Transcendence.
I have had a very, very minimal experience with a bit of yoga, so I mean, one can understand from the beginning, even in a beginner's class, that what you're looking for is that idea of emptying your mind. Mm-hmm. And as we were saying before we went on air, the mind seems to be addicted to a sense of experience. If you're not doing something, somehow, you know, if your mind is not at the distaff, then something is wrong. Mm-hmm. Whereas what transcendence tries, or to try and achieve transcendence, one has to empty one's mind. And I found that incredibly difficult, obviously as a beginner. There are people who manage to do it, but I certainly didn't manage. I was hopeless. But transcendence, you said before, is not going up and beyond, it's going through.
So
can you explain that a bit? Because I found that very interesting.
Very interesting. One way of explaining emptiness is detachment and presence. When I empty myself, or I empty my mind, or I search for stillness, I am actually detaching myself from fragmentation and clutter and thoughts, which lead me into illusion, or lead me to this forgetfulness of the core of my being, the essence. So even in Christian, I can speak from the Christian tradition.
I can see the relevance there, definitely.
Yeah. But I think and I believe there is a connection with to transcend is to go through. So it's not erasing or neglecting thoughts or neglecting the world or neglecting our material dimension, our material aspect, but going through it and be aware that we are there's more than that. There's more than that. So going through it and going to the essential. What is basic? What makes you human? What gives you identity? To explain it in simple terms, like for example, we find it also in Christian dogma, let alone in spirituality. In Christian dogma, for example, the doctrine of the Trinity. It all emerges from silence. The Word, which is enfleshed in Jesus Christ in Christianity, is generated in silence, and it goes back to silence. I think in Hinduism and Buddhism, there's this also this
later on, Hinduism takes this up
again.
Even because of the use in both those cultures of the Sanskrit language and the earlier texts.
And also, for example, the great mystery of the Christian tradition is the kenosis of Christ, the self-emptying of Christ, who goes through the hell which we go through. And he goes through it in Christianity to pave the way for us to go through that self-emptying, through that silence. So obviously we can just live it as a historical fact and we celebrate and with external forms. Okay, it's all right. But there's a much deeper dimension to that, which is, I must say, archetypal, and which one is encouraged to live it and experience it in one's own interiority, which then obviously brings a change or a transformation, because transcendence always brings transformation. Transformation in our lifestyle, in the way we live, in the way we structure our day, in the way we experience our relationships. So, because transcendence and emptying, self-emptying, is about being present to myself, to God, and to others.
Going back to Paswami, I've heard you read Sanskrit poetry before, and you were saying that it's the word itself, the actual language itself, is able to put across this idea of spirituality, and it does that through poetry. Through
it does it through all sorts of systems. Even what we call it grammar, they don't call it grammar in Sanskrit. What we call grammarians are actually called deconstructionists. The earliest one of these people who wrote a masterpiece was called Panini. And he wrote this masterpiece, which we call grammar. But what he does there is he takes ordinary speech and starts showing in all sorts of various ways how to break down that ordinary speech into statements, phrases, into words. And the words are broken down further into stems and into seeds. And then those seeds are brought back to vowels and consonants. And those are brought back to stillness and to the phonetic abilities of the human creature to articulate speech. So what I'm saying right now, all this speech that is flowing through my system at the moment, can, with these methods, be brought to stillness and then back to speech. So that while I'm speaking, Sanskrit claims that while one is speaking, one can be also aware of this stillness that supports all this speech. And this is the divinity. In Sanskrit, the word for non-attachment is vairagya. Vairagya is made up of vai and ragya. Ragya is the word where we get the English word rage from. So there is activity, passion. sometimes fear and anger as well in that ragya. Why ragya is distilling of all that? It's not fighting it, because if you fight it, it will grow. It's moving through it with the awareness of the fact that even this activity relies on, ultimately, on stillness, like speech ultimately relies on silence.
It seems a bit of a paradox, though, that on one side you're talking about meditation and emptying your mind, and on the other hand you're looking at this and saying that even using language can also create this sense of stillness.
Yes, because we have acquired very strange notions of what meditation really is. Mm-hmm. We think of meditation as shutting up and emptying. You mentioned these words, and that is, I'm not surprised. It's next to impossible to empty the mind, because the nature of the mind is to be full of activity, full of ideas. The point about the mind is that there is, at least in Sanskrit culture, they don't identify mind as an individual limited being or aspect of one's being. Mind is like the air we breathe. The air we breathe is common to us all, but we take what we need from it. And mind is like that. It's common to all human beings, and human beings take what they need from it. This is how
it's amazing
seen.
Concept.
So the limits are broken down there. And there's a whole psychology, which is a Sanskrit psychology, built on this. That makes it quite exciting.
Oh, very exciting.
Because the link between language, its dynamics, its structures, and how the mind operates and relates in one sense to physicality and in the other sense to causality is quite extraordinary. And the Sanskrit language has all this embedded into its structures. They really worked hard, these people, to create this
so long ago.
Yes, and for such a long time as well.
Perhaps in the last few minutes that we have, you can talk about the shape of the seminar and give us some details about it, and sort of look at that horrible European Union word, deliverables, learning outcomes. What do you expect the people who attend to have achieved, perhaps, by...
Am I supposed to answer this?
Well, I don't know.
What I expect or what they expect, I have no idea. Certainly, it's an experience of, first of all, recognizing that like other languages, Sanskrit comes to terms with the human beings' capacities of articulating their thoughts, their deepest feelings, and somehow... Perhaps if we're lucky during the course, we might give some intimation of how to use this articulate means in order to dissolve grief, sorrow, these things that really we human beings suffer from. In Sanskrit, in the Upanishad, there is a beautiful verse which says, Ashari Ram Shari Re, bodiless amidst bodies. Shwanavasthe shwavasthitam, still amidst all these activities, all these movements and activities, mahantam vibhum atmanam matvad hiro nashochati. The great men and women of this world, with this awareness of being bodiless amidst bodies and still where there is movement, they move through this world and dissolve shoka, it's called, grief. So there is a method for dissolving grief, and the Upanishad tells you, now if you take a verse like that and start to break it down into its phrases, into its words, into what lies behind those words even, so that you do it even physically with the words themselves, you start to acquire inner awareness of not merely what this phrase is saying, but of what it might mean to you as a human being. Perhaps if we can give some intimation of that, that would be quite something.
Father Camilleri, perhaps you can give us some details about where it's going to be, how people can contact you, those
basics. So it is organized between, also by the Carmelite Institute, Malta. Its premises are in the Priory in Imdina. The seminar will start on the 26th, It's a Friday evening. We'll start at 7. It's not residential. The whole program, the entire program of the weekend is on the Facebook event page. So it's one just has to type Sanskrit Spirituality Seminar. And also for bookings and to contact for those who are interested in attending and participating in the seminar, they can do it through our website, Carmelite Priory, MDina. They will find all the information there, and emails and telephone numbers.
Really good. And to give a bit of a blast to the Carmelite Priory at MDina, I must say I'm always very amazed, impressed with the variety of events that you organize. In fact, we have a permanent link from our news point because it's really so very interesting.
Mm-hmm. We're trying to, what we did as Carmelites is that we went back. It's a spiritual exercise to go back, an ascetical exercise, to go back to what originated monasteries and priories. And surprisingly, what originated monasteries and priories was not to have a house and a home for friars and monks, that also, but also to create a hub, a center, wherein culture can be preserved in a living way. And to create dialogue and also to make people reflect, to find a haven to go through.
This is fundamentally necessary in today's
In today's world. So we're trying to do that.
Situation.
I'm sure that your seminar will be more popular than even you imagine. I'd just like to say thank you very much to Professor Michael Zamid and to Reverend Dr. Charlotte Camilleri
for
coming to talk to us about Sanskrit spirituality.
Thank you.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il-programm li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġu plilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.